Okay, so welcome everyone. Really, really good to see you all tonight. Very, very good to see you all. So I'll just first of all just want to tell you the format for the evening. We have some time to mingle at the start and look at paintings. Then we're going to I'm going to interview Bhavadra for about 45 minutes, something like that. See how it feels. And then there'll be a time after the interview to look at the paintings some more and to have some more nibbles. You'll notice that the cakes, David John did the cakes to look, the icing is looking like abstract art, as long as that's clear. So I wouldn't want you to miss the reference. Okay, so I want to just introduce Bhavadra just a little bit first. So I've known Bhavadra for many, many years now. In fact, I knew Bhavadra when he first came along to the centre. Actually, I remember you coming along with Mohananda. I remember you for a while. You were sort of a joint, as it were. We used to live together in Sakavati. And at one point we painted the mural together at the LBC. And as we all hear as we go through the interview, Bhavadra's been painting very solidly, on his own, pretty much, in this studio in Suffolk. It's very, very difficult to have an ongoing studio practice. It's quite a lonely thing to do. You're on your own a lot of the time. Especially if you're not working with a gallery and so on, which is very, very difficult to do nowadays. It must be one of the most difficult worlds to break into now, almost like the music industry. If you haven't got a gallery, you're having to do a lot, you know, painting and going into the studio day after day without very much encouragement, and perhaps a few friends coming in, but nothing much more than that. And to do that week in, week out, year in, year out, is really quite remarkable. And I've obviously been looking at Bhavadra's paintings now. When did you move to Vidrasana?
2001.
Yeah, for a long time.
11 years.
Yeah. And I've been going in and looking at them. And you've just seen this gradual change. But for myself, recently, I think, now they've really... There's a moment, I think as we go through, I might even be able to find a moment, but there's a definite moment for me where all the different sort of elements in the painting sort of came together. And I really was very excited, I was particularly excited actually about these two just recently.
And it's been here.
So Bhavadra's on sabbatical from Suffolk at the moment. as you do. Yeah. If you live in the country, you have a sabbatical in London and vice versa. I really wanted us to come and just sort of talk to Bhavadra, look at his work, and you know, really try and get a sense of what Bhavadra's been doing all this time. So let's start. I could go on and on.
I could go on and on listening.
Yes, well we better not
very
do that.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. So I thought let's start with first of all, how did art and painting enter your life? Yeah, let's start with that and then we'll move on to Buddhism.
Okay. Well, I drew a picture of Jesus in the manger with some sheep and when I was about 3 years old.
Still got it now.
My mum still got it. So it started there somewhere. At school, I had the choice when I was at school, leaving school, of going to university or to do, I forget what, literature or philosophy or something, or go to art college. And much to my parents' disappointment, I chose to go to art college. And that's back a long way, actually. I suppose 1970 or something when I first went to art college. So, quite a lot of years at art college. So it's kind of always woven into my life, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think for, you know, as a teenager, as going to art college, leaving art college, I always had this idea that I wanted to be a painter, you know, wanted to be like some of the heroes, you know. At that period, the heroes were the kind of American sort of expressionist, abstract expressionist painters, you know. Mm. So it's always been woven into my life, but I mean, for a long time, it didn't quite work out in the way I expected it to for quite a long time.
Can you end up painting the theatre at one point?
Yeah, well, I ended up, what happened when I left art college is I was painting. I was also teaching art.
Oh, yeah,
and actually that's the teaching side, I mean, just because of the life commitments I'd made, teaching in a way just demanded more of my time, and I found myself spending less and less time painting. And actually remember finding that as a really difficult, almost distressing period of my life.
Mm.
Felt like what I really kind of wanted to do, or was the best that was in me to be done, was kind of getting marginalised or left out.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 1980s, mid-80s, I kind of threw that whole life up and moved back to London. And I was painting full-time then from the 80s onwards. So I did. I kind of was painting and earning money, working in theatre, doing theatre scenery painting and things.
And your life came to a bit of a... Your life, as I remember, it came to a real crisis about that point.
Yes.
You got ill, and that was... It was out of that crisis, I think, that you came in contact with the centre and with Buddhism. So perhaps tell us a bit about that crisis and how you got involved in Buddhism, because that's an interesting part of this story, isn't it?
Yeah. I think... I did get very seriously ill in 1989, or the end of 1989.
Mm.
And I was in hospital. It took me a long, long time to recover. I remember the time, I was painting and not happy with the painting I was doing. So that's interesting looking back now. I can look back at what I was doing there. And I can now see the points at which, if only you would have kind of carried on that theme, or if you had pushed that idea a bit more, you'd had more confidence in what you were doing, then there was potential in it. And it feels like it's only sort of later now that I seem to be able to kind of, manage myself, if you like, in that way.
Mm.
I did get very seriously ill, and I remember, in a way, it felt like a relief to stop trying to live my life as I was living it. I probably wasn't looking after myself, burning the candle at both ends and in the middle as well at times. And
you don't need to hear about that.
No. No. No, okay, so I ended up very seriously and in hospital. But that coincided almost exactly with me first coming along to the London Buddhist Centre. In fact, I came along for two, what was then Wednesday evenings. That was the introductory evening in those days, in 1990, actually. I must have got my dates wrong there, because I was ill in 1990, that's right, and not 89. And,
It's Saturday. Oh, no. It'll be here, isn't it?
Yes.
We've got a chair for after, actually. Actually, we've got some to film.
Anyway, it's obviously into the room.
Perhaps probably in a chair to the front. Sorry, can
we? Yeah. Yes, I'd come along just as I was starting to feel ill. I thought I had flu or something like that. But I came along to two Wednesdays running. Learned mindfulness of breathing, the Metta Bhavana practice, for those who know what I'm talking about in that respect. And then got very seriously ill, and I was in hospital. And during the time I was there, and during my recovery, which took a couple of years, really, fully, I wasn't really up to doing anything. I could read and listen to talks and things, and that's what I did. I spent a lot of time kind of engaging with Bhante's teaching. I was reading Bhante's books. I was listening to what were cassettes then. Got another chair? And then as I slowly recovered and got my energies back, I involved myself more and more at the LBC, moved into the community. And I dropped painting, and it felt like a relief at the time to do that. There was some way in which it was sort of creating kind of pressure for me that seemed to be unhelpful. So for a long time I lived in the community during that time. I got ordained. I was working, Maitre Bandhu and I started up the Gallery Cafe, as it was then, as a men's right livelihood business. And I worked there. We'll skate over that as well.
Yes, that's true.
Maitre Bandhu gave his all in the 6 months he was there.
And left me to it.
Yeah, left me to it. And anyway, I was there for another 6 years or so after that.
Very, very easy, wasn't it? Very
Yeah, and I don't know, I was fully engaged in that. And again, I seem to have left painting behind in some way. Although we did do projects, like I painted, we painted the mural, you know, the Lotus, Maitre Bandhu and I together. Maitre Bandhu designed it and did the work and preparing it, and then we painted that on the outside of the wall in the courtyard at the LBC. I painted shrine rooms here, Essen, Padmaloka, with Chintamani, and at the LBC. I was kind of using my painting, you know, whatever skills I had, I was using in a kind of an applied sort of way. And it was only sort of more recently, in 2000, 2001, that I don't know, I just started. When I was on retreat, I'd find myself sort of drawing again and painting again. And it felt like there was a kind of a new... I felt like it was a new... I almost felt like I was starting from scratch again, actually. And there was a bit of freshness to it and some promise to it in my mind. And it just grew on me that I wanted to get back to doing my own work, partly just to see what would happen. You know, I was thinking, well, you know, how would it be? Would it be different than it was before? And how would it be different? And had I changed? And would the work change? And I just felt I wanted to kind of explore that. I couldn't sort of let that drop. And then, you know, we bought the Vajrasana at Potash Farm, and the opportunity was there. Rat Negotia engineered that, or in a way, really, as chair at the time. We needed someone to be living there to look after the place. But also, it was fairly free as to how that person would organise their time.
Yeah.
And there was space there for a studio. So it seemed like an opportunity to get back to painting.
You pretty much built the studio, didn't you?
Really? I built the studio, That took a while.
Very handy, aren't you, as well? Isn't it?
Yeah, I built the studio. It took quite a while and did it all and painted it all white and then made up some canvases and painted them white and put them on the wall. And then sat there in a panic for kind of, what do I do now, sort of thing. And I did feel like I was, in a good way, in what turned out, I think, to be a good way, I felt like I was going right back to scratch. I don't quite know why, but, you know, I think it was good, because, yeah, I kind of dropped quite a lot of my expectations and my ideas about what I would do, and I was just very much more open to just seeing what would happen.
So let's go on about, you know, about that whole period of painting, well, this painting life you've had. Because the first thing, of course, that, you know, I noticed when I came to the studio is that you weren't doing any, you did a little tiny bit of figurative work, not very much at all, but you've always been, since then, you know, sort of ploughing this furrow of abstract painting. Why abstract painting? And, because it started, you know, they've really sort of, there's been always this concern with the mark of the brush, right from the beginning, actually, pretty much. The relationship of the mark of the brush to the canvas and so on. Just say a little bit about what drew you in that direction, why abstract painting, and then what this concern with the formal mark of the brush, you know, the sort of detail of the brush.
Right, I'll do my best. I mean, some of what one does is, it seems to me, you know, it does for me, is sort of inexplicable to oneself in a way. Maybe afterwards you can see, but... so I'll have a go. I suppose going back again to what I was saying, I think before, when I was painting full-time, I said something about a lack of confidence. I don't think it was quite self-confidence, just, but it was something to do with a kind of a confidence in what was, you know, if you like, what culturally and historically was was a meaningful or significant way of producing art, if you like. And I wanted to paint. I didn't actually feel the call to do anything else other than paint. And I think there was something quite basic, almost chthonic, in in the manipulating of a particular kind of substance, which paint is, you know. And I think, in a way, I can't quite verbalise or conceptualise that. It's just made me feel most go back to a childish or a child level of a kind of a particular way of engaging with the material world, if you like.
But I think you've never painted in Buddhist icons, for instance.
Hardly ever tried, actually. I think, I'd say about that. I mean, what it came down, because before, I think there was even a question of, actually, is painting relevant anymore? It seemed to be one of those questions, you know, should I be starting to work out how to use computers or, you know, make films or videos or something like that? So there was a certain, not quite sure of the basis of just being a painter. I think, you know, culturally in, you know, modern art, since the, say, the 1980s and 90s, I think that, in a way, is a question that seems to be less kind of, you know, at the forefront. Just seems like, you know, you're free, one is free, if you like, inverted commas, it seems like so many different sort of forms of art seem to be able to coexist.
Painting's been declared dead so many times,
yeah,
hasn't it?
You know, that's right, yeah. So I think what it came down to was just coming to terms with the fact that, in a way, I can only do the painting that I can do. I can only love, you know, I can only fall in love, if you like, with the kind of painting that I fall in love with. I can't make myself sort of respond differently to other things. I can only sort of respond to the materials that are involved in paint and the possibilities in the way that I do it. And I think I've had to learn how to just stand, if you like, on that, and just be confident that through, you know, what happens when I get into a studio, that there is some meaning and it is worth pursuing for me. It's very easy to sort of almost not get started because you're worrying about, am I doing the right thing? Am I going in the right direction? And in the end I decided, well, actually my direction's given me, and it's like the kind of person, almost a bit like the personality that you're given, you know, one has to develop. You can't be another personality, and then you can transcend the one you've got, possibly, or hopefully, in the end. But anyway, I could only be the kind of painter that I was.
Yeah, indeed. It's like you can't give an artist their concerns, can't you? You can't tell them what they should be painting.
Yeah.
But who in contemporary art are you? You know, I can see the influence on someone like Richter, the contemporary artist. I can see, at least in this concern with the brush art, and you see people like Jasper Johns, not how he uses the, not his sort of irony, but his concern with, you know, the brush and so on. Even, you know, American high modernism, you can sort of see is somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Just say a little bit about your influences with, you know, Western, high modernism, particularly.
Well, one thing I think I kind of have noticed, if you like, in myself, kind of fairly more recently, is actually how broad my kind of, you know, the kind of painting, for instance, that I respond to is. But, you know, both kind of, you know, in contemporary terms, but also historically as well. I think what really fires me is, if you like, the incredible number of ways in which the number of different things that paint can do, the number of sort of the range of ideas, feelings, emotions, significance that paint can actually communicate. So that's something I love, the fact that there are, I can look at so many different painters. I could go from Piero della Francesca to Jackson Pollock to, like a big Manet, for instance. I don't know, just to pick a few, Van Gogh. And just kind of, I just love the range of what paint is able to do, actually. And I think even then, obviously, in a way, looking at it over the centuries, the majority of the Western tradition in art, going back hundreds and hundreds of years, is, you know, isn't abstract, if you like. But I find I'm quite often, when I look at painting, you know, I'm up quite close to it, you know, responding to the kind of more direct sort of physical things that paint does, the kind of movement, the gesture, the kind of energy that's communicated. Mm. And then you can step back and read the imagery, if you like, or read the meaning in it. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, I think it does, because I think that I was just thinking there's a modern art critic who he was saying that he thought that abstract painting hadn't been given enough time, that it moved on too quickly, and that there was much more to explore in there. I wonder whether you feel that in relation to your work. I mean, in a way, your work's not entirely abstract, because next door you've got, which I want to come on to in a minute, you know, that relationship between the paint surface and the depicted image. But you are definitely trying to explore, you know, painting, not in a figurative way, at least, not in a simply figurative way.
Yes, but actually I think maybe what happens, it's almost as if rather than having a, I don't know, if you like, having an image or, you know, a picture or something in mind, and then working out how to paint that, it's almost like, I kind of feel in a way my paintings are coming the other way. I'm actually starting with most of the work, starting with a painting process, if you like, a way of using paint. And actually I'm quite interested in the way there might be resonances in it or meaning in it. And I can't say that they're realistic, but they have references to art, to other art. And maybe they start to suggest things. But there's a certain way in which I don't want those things too pinned down, what it is suggesting.
You say something about your process, because you've got quite a lot of the paintings do come out of a process idea, I don't know, to do with how you apply paint. Say something about that, that process, because I think that says quite a lot about how the paintings appear.
Well, I think actually, I mean, when I said I went back, I felt I was going back to basics when I went to Madrasa and, if you like, started again, you know, the process of painting. In a way, I did go back to basics. It was sort of like, as I said, I was kind of, what do I do, you know? Where do I start? I felt I was starting from scratch in some ways. And in a way, I went back to basics. I went back to the basics of colour. That's where it started from.
That's right, yeah.
Now, if you take red, you know, red paint, yellow paint, blue paint and white paint, you can make any colour, you know, in the visible spectrum out of those, if the colours are sort of pure enough to start with. You know, that's a basic kind of given, you know. When I used to teach, I used to get the class to set me a challenge. Okay, you know, I'd have those three colours and white, and I'd get them to say, okay, make purple or make... And someone would end up saying, make black. And you'd say, bet you think I can't make black out of these colours. And they'd say, no, I bet you can't. But actually you can if you just get it just right. Or something like black, anyway. So I went back to that, and it feels like... and I went back to the basic colours, and I decided to go back to, you know, a brush and the brush stroke, and that's kind of where I was starting from, actually. And I was going back to oil paint, which is pretty traditional, and I also went back to painting, technically it's called, fairly self-explanatory, I think, wet into wet. Whereby, you know, the painting is kind of wet all the time I'm painting. So what I found interesting was how you could have three colours and white, if you like, call it four colours, and, you know, this flat surface of the canvas and a brush, and how it's almost like from that absolute basis, it felt like the whole of... like anything could arise, anything could be conditioned from that initial starting point.
Kind of magic.
Yeah, I think so, actually. Yeah, I think that was it, a kind of feeling of the possibilities. It's like, you know, things arising. I mean, some of you may have heard me describe this before. I said it, talked about it in the talk once, but, you know, if you walk, I used to do it every morning a few years ago when I was living in the LBC, walk around Victoria Park Lake, and there's the fountain, when the fountain's going, which it is these days, which is nice, And if the sun's out and the wind's blowing in the right direction and you get to the right point, you see a rainbow, and it's kind of moving, you know, it's completely sort of shifting and taking form. And, well, I don't know, without kind of explaining it, it felt like, you know, that was kind of possibility of things just coming into being.
Mm.
And I felt I had some sort of feel about that with paint, actually.
Mm.
Just like everything else, you could take the basic elements of paint and painting, and it felt like anything could come into being.
Mm. Mm.
So, and what I also found interesting was I could take the same brush, same colours, and I could even try to do the same thing on a number of different canvases, and there would be a point at which they'd start heading off in their own direction, if you like. So however hard, I didn't really try that hard, but I imagined even if I tried really hard, it just felt like whatever subtle was there in all the conditions meant that you'd end up with something that was heading off in a different direction. And that wet into wet colour, applying just those simple colours one onto the other, meant there was all kinds of ways in which the colours mixed and mingled.
You didn't actually mix them on the palette, did you? They're all
I mixed the colours up in a pot, and then I'm using slightly more sophisticated colours. I mean, it's fairly obvious in a painting like that, say, for instance. But I use the colours, mix them all up, and then apply them. But the way they mix and mingle is it's always in ways that I can't predict. So there's always something that's unpredictable that's kind of emerging.
Mm.
At least that's when it's going well. If I start to get too fixed on it going in a certain way, that's when it doesn't work, you know.
Mm.
And I do get plenty of rejects at the end. But.
So you've got this sort of, there's an alchemy aspect of it, isn't there, that out of those colour, those three colours and white, and out of a brush, so many things can be achieved. I wonder whether there's also sort of a purity aspect of it, just stripping it all back to here's a brush, here's the colours, what can you do without any more than that? You've wanted to keep quite strict to that, haven't you?
Yeah, that's true, yes. I mean, it felt like, it felt quite liberating to do that, actually. You know, it just seemed to sort of suit me, you know. Perhaps I imagine, in a way, there's something slightly zen about it or something, at the same time, it would seem to allow for a kind of quite a richness to emerge sometimes.
So let's start talking about the particular painting. So you've got, one of the things that obviously then you want to ask is how your practice of the Dharma, how Buddhism, how your spiritual life comes into the painting. And, you know, when you look at these ones, there's, well, in all of these, and I'll talk about the other ones next door in a minute, but these have got this kind of suggestion of radiance. Some of them seem to me to have art historical references, like, I think when I first looked at this, it very much, the colours are very like Rubens, for instance, who I know you're influenced a bit by, and Rubens is famous for his, you know, use of paint, his sort of remarkable use of paint. He used to run up and down step ladders, didn't he? Painting with two hands and brushing each hand and getting his assistants to just mix more and more paint. Remarkable. But there's something in that colour. So there's art references, but, you know, there is a kind of heavenly-like radiance in these paintings. And then in these, there's this suggestion of light behind, and in this one again. So perhaps say a little bit about how you think of spiritual life and spiritual values being, you know, expressed in the painting. I know that's a big issue for you.
Yes.
And how can you do that whilst being true to this purity of the colours and the brush, being true to your process, which is about allowing things to be what they are rather than having too fixed an idea on top of them. Sort of. Quite a difficult combination, isn't it?
It's almost like the one comes before the other, maybe. I think, you can make those observations about the painting, and I think that's fair enough, and I can accept it. But it's not quite like that I set out
you don't
to do anything.
Right, yeah.
I got a feeling that, I don't know, it's slightly mysterious, I think, even to me. But I got a feeling if I use the words, if I'm true as I can be to the materials I'm using and the process as it unfolds, etc., etc., then this is, that's what emerges.
There is a Zen-like aspect to that, isn't there? That just by being true to the activity, the sort of shine emerges almost.
Yeah. Because, I mean, actually, you know, I mean, I'm not, I haven't put up the worst paintings that I've done up on the wall. I mean, I'm not sure about some of them because I'm still, I've only just sort of been working on these, so I felt, oh, I'm not quite sure what they're going to be like taking them out of the studio and putting them up and lighting them and showing them to people. But, I mean, you know, there's plenty of, well, not plenty, there's a few, every now and then a few really horrible paintings emerge, so, you know, the process doesn't, no, it's got better actually, the, you know, the fallout rate has got a bit better.
Well, I remember Subhuti coming recently and being really struck by their spiritual content, and I think it is interesting for me that that grows out of the painting process for you, because it struck me that perhaps you could say if you have to put Buddhism into the paintings, it doesn't count. To me, that our spiritual practice needs to sort of just come out of being, not be a kind of idea that we stick into a painting. It's quite exciting, isn't it, for me in your work that those values are just coming out of a stripped down, pure sort of paint, brush, colours kind of. I don't know whether that's how you think of it.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think maybe this answers some of the other questions as well as different ways I could think of it. One is that, I mean, like you said, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not painting, and it's a very good question, that's what people often ask me, but you're not painting, you know, you're Buddhist, but you're not painting Buddhist iconography, etc. And I don't know how to do that. That's one of the things I was saying that I was kind of liberated and think, well, maybe I don't have to do that, I've just got to explore what I do. So I think I found myself answering before that someone said, well, are they Buddhist paintings? And I don't know. I think they're Buddhist paintings to the extent that I'm a Buddhist, if you like, in a certain sort of way.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's something about not separate practice from life, Buddhist practice from life, and you can't separate it from anything that you do in the work. So that's one sort of take on it, I think.
At the same time, I just think, you know, I see that in their work. You know, they are, I mean, I'm aware of this painting process you've got, which is very strict, and I've tried to stop you doing stuff. But yeah, it sort of works for you, doesn't it, more and more. You keep finding new ways of expressing something that you didn't know you were trying to express. So. Like when you painted these paintings, I was very, very struck by these two particularly. I didn't expect them after this painting. I think this is an earlier painting.
Yeah, that's one.
And I remember seeing that and thinking that was really wonderful. And yeah, I wouldn't have expected this from that somehow. And yet it's still, in a sense, the same means. All you've done is allowed yourself a bit of wiggle.
Yeah, that's right. Wiggleism.
You've got wiggleism.
Yeah, I just introduced the
wiggle.
Very well known
form. People will call it your wiggle phase.
Yeah, something like that.
Picasso had a blue period.
Yeah.
But he's got a wiggle period.
Yeah. But it did start again with what can you do with the brush? And I'm going to talk about a brush. Then if I've got a bucket, a nice murky bucket out there, it's full of all the brushes, I just use them over and over again and just wipe them off, and they're just decorating, you know, 4-inch decorating brushes or 3-inch ones, whatever scale I'm using.
You don't change scale of brush with these either, do you?
No, I haven't in these, though I have experimented with that a bit. And so, I mean, I think I started off doing something that was quite rigorous, which was taking a loaded paintbrush. That the only example I've got here is the white painting that's in the studio there, which is my homage to the Rubens deposition. Well, that's an example where I was doing quite a lot of paintings where I was just taking the loaded brush and just running it down the canvas, and then the degree to which the paint came off the brush, you know. But I'd do that over and over again with different colours so that they kind of start mingling together. Mm. And I was just enjoying what was happening. I wonder what will happen if I put this colour down. Mm. So I did that. Mm. That one ended up with a lot of strong colour and then lots of white over the top. So that's how I got that effect. Mm. So I used the brush like that. And then this is an example here where I just sort of did short brush marks all over. I was trying to create a bit more of a kind of all over effect. And then for some reason I decided I wanted to put a bit more energy into it, so I started doing the wheels, which kind of each of those just simple ways in which you kind of make a brush mark on the canvas just seemed to kind of open up different possibilities with a different feel.
Because I remember you did those ones, you know, drawing the brush right down, then you did it. You know, at first you started strictly formal, like a, you know, American model, like what was his name? You know, who's that one who just does that? I can't remember that. Anyway. Who? Yes, that's who I was thinking. Oh, like Frank Stella, yeah.
That's right.
That's what he did, didn't he?
Yeah, that's
right. A rigorous think of here's the canvas shape, here's the brush. Yeah. That's what you're going to get, folks. It's an object, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there is.
In a way, you sort of started a bit like that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Although without the irony of the... although perhaps Stella wasn't...
But I think that was the contrast of that relatively rigorous approach with the kind of mutability and the unpredictability of what the colours would then actually do. Mm. So there was a kind of tension there, if you like, between one and the other.
A Buddhist sensibility.
Yeah.
Albeit not sort of stuck onto it, but somehow informing you know, what you did. And then let's just talk about, then you've got this, we have a deposition of Christ on the cross from Rubens' famous painting in the cathedral in where is it?
Antwerp,
yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the great religious images, probably one of Rubens' greatest painting, most memorable painting. And then you've got the Titian's Bacchus and Ariadne that's in the National. And then you've got this strange, again, this sort of this truth to material, as they used to talk about, you know, just the brush mark. And then you're erasing that to create this drawing. What's going on there between why the deposition of Christ, you know, and the diagonals of paint that you've used become, the dust falling through a cathedral, although where it would have been, but also, you know, sacred, you know, divine light shining on Christ's dead body. You know, what say something about the Rubens first, and we'll move on to Titian.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to sort of sort out how things go in the process, but I think first, I kind of somehow just wanted it. You could call it kind of. I did a series of paintings of that and a series of paintings of Titian's, and in my mind I'd like to do more of those as well. It's almost like a slightly parallel set of works process than the abstract
painting. It works interestingly together, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Having a parallel, yeah.
Because in a way the painting process is the same, but then I'm kind of going back into the paint, having put it on while it's still wet, you know, to create the image. And I think in some ways that, if you like, it's my homage to, you know, the lineage of Western painting.
Western religious painting?
Not necessarily, because there's the classical references as well, which go back even further.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like a slightly other strand. Mm. The figures in the Titian, most of the figures in those paintings that Titian did, he took the figures, if you like, from pre-existing classical sculptures.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've got this sort of image and slightly fanciful image of these figures dancing through time, you know, they're sort of, you know, perhaps they even came, I don't know, earlier, but, you know, they danced into Titian's painting and then they've danced into a very much inferior painting world, but they've managed to dance in here, and this feels like keeping something alive, something that's much more pagan. Mm. The religious art, I think I've always had a sense that you know, with really good art, or great art, if you like, if it's, you know, allowable to use those sort of terms, there is something much, I mean, if you talk about, you know, a Rubens religious painting, or obviously Michelangelo or Raphael, or you know, any, Caravaggio. Feels to me that although they come from a Christian tradition and are expressing, you know, whatever Christian iconography or meaning that it's supposed to represent, I think in great art there's something much more universal than that in it. Yeah. And say the deposition from the cross there, I've always struck me as a very, very, you know, just such a moving painting of compassion, I suppose, or care, you know, in a way that goes way beyond, you know, just the Christian. Of course, you've got to reinterpret the actual figure of Christ in that painting to have that reading. So I felt like I was sort of trying to rescue that image from Christianity in some sort of way and kind of universalise it. And if you notice, I left the cross out. You're just sort of trying to emphasise just the kind of human relationships that are in the painting and that sense of care in the face of suffering, if you like.
And did the drawing come out, did the idea of it come out of that diagonal that you put on the paint, or what's relating to me? And it was, were you thinking this is the...
I don't remember what came first.
I can't remember either.
No, to be honest, I can't. I think I was playing around on a small scale, and I think I did some Titians first, simply, but I've been looking at Bacchus and Ariadne. And I'd done lots of... And I often do just splodge around with paint on a small size scale. And I think I just did a drawing in it, and then I quite liked the kind of slight tension and the interplay between the kind of areas of colour and the shapes of colour, and the figures, if you like, the imagery, and the way sometimes the blocks of colour, the brush marks, and the way the colours worked would sort of support, you know, the imagery, and sometimes they would almost work against it, if you like. That's about the only way I can put it. I'm not fully conscious in a way at the time of the process I went through in starting those pictures. But as I say, it was to do with something to do with me myself also coming into a relationship with those painters and with those paintings.
I mean, there's such a strong thing about that just the act of painting now and in the past, isn't it? And that having kind of magical significance, or can, you know, that somehow just by coloured mud, as it were, basically, you can create the deposition of, you know, the deposition of Christ, you can create the classical world in Titian and so on.
Yeah, I think so.
It's some sort of reference to that.
Yeah, I think that kind of magical recreation of worlds, you know.
What I want to move on to now, as we start to move to the end of our interview, one of the things that, you know, striking about you and your life, I've always thought that Buddhist artists, it's from a Buddhist, strictly Buddhist point of view, the person is as important as the work. You know, the Western tradition, I think, you know, it's excellence in the work is more important than excellence in the person. I think a Buddhist approach would be wanting excellence in both. So you've lived this kind of quite isolated spiritual life, even though you've been living at Vajrasana and you've been, you know, the caretaker there, and, you know, I don't know what we'd have done without you there. You know, it's not many people would have lived there on their own, caretaking for such a long time. And I think the centre really owes you a debt of gratitude in a little tiny hut that you live in with your very cold studio. But, you know, you've actually been, I suppose what I'm trying to bumble my way towards is, you've been trying to live out, I think, another way of practicing, which is not to do with, you haven't done that much teaching. You've been teaching in the Berry Group and you've done some teaching here. You've mainly been living out your spiritual life, particularly since you went to Vajrasana, through painting. Also, you've been very generous. You know, you're the one who goes to unblock the toilet and help people. I mean, I know everyone, when I've been with you, people are always knocking on your door wanting some caretakery thing. So you've been very, very generous in that way, in a simple way, you know. But you have been trying to live...
Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, that's right. You're not supposed to knock on the door. But you have been trying to live a spiritual life as an artist. So perhaps let's move towards a conclusion with you saying something about what is the path for an artist, if it's me? Is there other artists here? And it is something that Bante's talked about. It's something that perhaps we're at the beginning of, I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, well, obviously, you know, Bante has presented, Thangarachira has presented a kind of a vision, if you like, for the arts and the relationship to the Dharma. That's, you know, the possibility, or at least the necessity to develop our own aesthetic, our own forms, in all kinds of, you know, literature, you know, art, music, even architecture, with, you know, a new Vajrasana on the horizon, say. But it's, you know, the actual working out of that is, you know, in a way, it's left to us to work out. I think for a while before I went to Vajrasana and got back to painting, I was thinking, what would it really be like to be, if you like, in my case it was being a painter, so you know, taking that painting as an example, kind of fully, you know, kind of trained, fully imbued, you know, feel I come from the very particular Western tradition with all its sort of weight and inspiration as well in the past, and be a practicing Buddhist. You know, if you like, what, you know, if you put those two things together, what would it look like? And I'm not sure we still knew. I did think that, I mean, there were people, I mean, there was, well, certainly Chintamani and Aloka and others have for a long time have been kind of exploring how to paint Buddhist iconography in a way that's more and more relevant to us and our culture. But I mean, I could feel that I wasn't going to do that, and I wondered, apart from painting Buddhist iconography, what would it look like just to be painting, just to paint? Would it be any different? In fact, if I was a practicing Buddhist painting, would it be any different than if I wasn't a practicing Buddhist painter? And I just felt like that was really the crucial question that I wanted to try and find out. But it seemed to me what was really important in all of that was I could see if it was going to really go anywhere, it had to be done with some intensity. And actually, I think, I mean, I'm not saying I've managed that, I've tried. And intensity in both, actually.
In both
in terms of, you know, being trying to intensify one's practice as a Buddhist, you know, meditation practice, ethical practice, reflection practice, etc. And intensify the practice as a painter as well, which means effectively just putting time into it, serious time into it. And it is hard, it is hard. It also can be great at times, obviously, but I mean it's hard in the sense of it's demanding, it makes demands. And in order to get circumstances where I had time and space to do that, a Vajrasana, I kind of felt in a way it made demands that were in conflict with other aspects of life, like, you know, being sort of fully engaged in the Sangha or teaching. I mean, before I went to Vajrasana, I was kind of, you know, doing classes and teaching and talks and all kinds of things. But in a way, I kind of had to leave that.
You had to leave the community, haven't you, really?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I had to leave the community. So I think, but what I felt, what it needs for any of that, for that vision to be taken forward at all, that Bante's, you know, presented, it takes an intensity of practice and work. Otherwise, you just sort of, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean to say that everyone has to kind of engage with art or writing or music in an intense way. I think there's all kinds of levels and way in which you can engage with the arts that's really helpful and meaningful, etc. But I think I just wanted to see, I mean, I asked that question, what would it be like? In the end, I thought the only way I'll answer that question at all is by trying to do it. So it feels that being in the studio demands a Buddhist practice, actually, to work. You know, in some ways, I think I used the phrase earlier on, I've learned to manage, just like one, if you like, understands one's samskaras and habits, etc., and learns, hopefully, to a little bit to work, how to work with those in meditation or in relationship or communication. it's the same in the studio, actually. I mean, in some ways, I think my painting has benefited from Buddhist practice simply because I can watch my responses and understand them a little bit more to what's going on, you know. So I don't quite sort of, you know, flip quite so readily from intoxication to absolute despair, you know, depending on, you know, sort of how that's that great little bit of painting's just gone, you know. So there's that side of it. But I think also watching the process of something coming into being in the way that perhaps I've tried to describe, it feels to me it's like a, it feels to me actually it has started to work as a, well, I don't know how I can put it, it's like a practice of reflection as well. It's sort of just watching what happens, including the relationship to my consciousness and what's happening, or what's happening out there, is a kind of, it's almost like reflection out there, so I can't quite describe it in a way. Anyway, so it works at different levels.
So just to conclude, let's see how to conclude this, but let me think. So I suppose I want to ask you what I always ask, you know, with our poetry things, is what, you know, what is art for, from your point of view? this art, small question to end, you know, what's it for? In a sentence or two, no pressure.
What's it for?
Why do people do it? What's it for? What, you know, it's not going to save lives. What's it for?
It's funny. I mean, I could stand outside of my, I mean, you know, my inverted commas practice as a painter. I could stand out of, you know, my own work or my own studio practice. And I've come up with one answer, but it doesn't quite, probably if I'm standing in the studio in my own work, I'd probably come up with another answer. Well, I don't know, actually.
So what would the answer be in the studio? Is that sort of interesting? Is it for anything?
Actually, I think maybe there is a way of putting it that kind of brings the two together. I don't know. I don't know if it was something to do with, God, I was going to say love or something. Is that all right?
You can say love, yeah. Not a rude word.
it just feels like, I mean, I can look at it, I can look at, say, other art, you know, in all its forms, you know, and see that actually what it really is about the artist or the artist's consciousness, if you like, paying real attention to the world. And, you know, if you pay real attention, then I think in a way that's the same as love. You could say loving the world, paying attention, paying care, very closely and very, I don't know, very sort of heartfelt sort of way. Very clearly is good art, but also very deeply felt at the same time, whatever art you might be talking about. I kind of imagine that, you know, say with a writer, with a novelist or something, you know, you can sort of get a communication about how deeply and how the art, the writer, the novelist is kind of seeing or experiencing and then communicating that experience of the world. How clearly they're seeing it, but also with what depth of kind of empathy or sympathy with it that, that they're having. And then that communicates through the work. So I think it's something to do with that. So I can say that about, you know, kind of art. And if, but in the studio, if you like, within my own practice, I think maybe that is what I get from it. It feels like, at best, a sort of... it's like being, there's a possibility of being in a certain relationship with myself and the world around me in terms of the materials. The materials that I'm using. And the degree of care and attention that love, that kind of it demands of one in the process of painting. And when you, that isn't present, then the painting doesn't work, or it's ordinary. And the few occasions when that does, and that means letting it go, that means loving, means letting it be what it is as well, I think. And then something comes out of that. And that in itself feels very, very satisfying. I think that makes me feel that for myself I'm doing something worthwhile with my life, or the time that I've got left, if you like. And also one has the hope, but I can't do anything about this, and I don't know, that there's something in that that could be communicated. Because, I mean, I have spent a lot of time at Vajrasana painting all these paintings. My studio is getting smaller and smaller as the paintings stack up in the wall. And occasionally, you know, very kind, sympathetic friends come along and make kind of encouraging noises about what I'm doing. But sometimes it can seem like you're talking to yourself, in the sense that it's not a full communication until you do something in some way. And hopefully, you know, when you try to communicate, you can't predict or control how that communication is going to be received. So likewise, I can't predict or control how you receive what I've painted or what I'm saying now. But it feels like, at least, that's probably the best thing I can do with the rest of my life.
Well, that's a great place to finish. Thank you very much.